This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you tuned into Jeopardy! In 2011, you might have heard an exchange like this.
Watson, start us, please.
The European Union for 200.
As of 2010, Croatia and Macedonia are candidates, but this is the only former Yugoslav republic in the EU. Brad.
What is Bosnia?
No. Watson.
What is Serbia?
No, that too is incorrect. Correct response is, what is Slovenia? Watson, back to you.
That's Watson, IBM supercomputer playing Jeopardy. Of course, that was one of the very few answers that he got wrong, or Watson got wrong on Jeopardy. And he competed against two of Jeopardy's most successful players, Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter. And despite that fumble, Watson beat his human adversaries handily. Computer scientists worldwide, you know, they stood up. They took notice, and so did a young playwright named Madeline George. George's latest play is called The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence, and it just had its world premiere off Broadway. It stars no less than four different Watsons, among them a fictionalized version of IBM's supercomputer. And it's a play about amazing things technology can do for us and what it can't. And I'm very happy to have with me playwright Madeline George. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much for having me.
I did enjoy that play.
I'm glad.
And was it Jeopardy an aha moment for you to write a play about Watson?
It was. I mean, in fact, I had the germ of an idea earlier than that. I had sort of noticed that there were these Watson figures through our cultural history that all served as helper figures of one kind or another, mostly Watson of Alexander Graham Bell and the invention of the telephone, and Watson Sherlock Holmes' famous sidekick. And then I was like, that's a curious thing to write about, but I didn't really know what to do with it until the Jeopardy tournament in 2011. And then I was like, oh, that is a really interesting helper, Watson. That opens up a question for me.
And that's interesting because in the play, one of the characters talks about we Watsons don't get enough recognition. You know, our bosses would be nowhere without we helpers.
Right, that's right. That's the Thomas A. Watson. The Alexander Graham Bell's assistant who says that.
Yeah, because as you know, but because I'm sure you studied the history, he built everything.
He
talks about it in the play.
Right, exactly. I made up the number 214 prototypes, which is not an accurate number, but he did in fact use his own two hands to build all the different experimental versions of the telephone that ultimately led to the tool we use today.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about in the play how Alexander Graham Bell's Watson insisted that Graham Bell's quote was misremembered.
Right. I mean, in fact, that is a little bit of a dramatic license on my part. That it is the case that we're not exactly sure what Alexander Graham Bell called out to his assistant on that wire. Some people have it as, Mr. Watson, come here, I want to see you. Mr. Watson, come here, I want you. Mr. Watson, come here, I need you. Even Watson himself, the assistant, was a little unclear in the years that went by about what he had actually heard. But anyway, we know that it was some kind of cry of need.
Because he spilled some...
This is
battery
the
acid
legend,
or something,
anyway, is
right?
that he spilled this acidulated water onto his shirt, right?
And so, would you cry out, "Watson, come here! I need you!" Or, "Watson, get the heck over here!" You
know, right,
that
exactly.
Sort of thing.
One way or the other. In the play, I use it as a way for this assistant Watson to make a point about how specifically it was him that was needed, and not just some sort of generalized assistance. It's the way that he comes to feel important in the story.
Yeah, and you talk about the role of. Fictionally, can we make a Watson that really could be a companion and understand and be taught how to be sort of human?
Right. I mean, it's interesting because the IBM's Watson, the supercomputer, is so far surpasses our minds in terms of what it can know and the kinds of questions that it can answer and how rapidly. But I wonder how useful a device like that can be to us as a companion, per se. Certainly as a helper that can help us know things and help us solve problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were surrounded by science as a child.
I was. In fact, my dad is a scientist.
Did it rub off at all, do you think?
It's interesting. I mean, I guess the part of the scientific process that I'm sort of interested in this play, at least, is the way that the human relationships kind of dovetail with the problem solving that they're doing scientifically. I think maybe that's what a playwright raised by a scientist does, is try to think about the human dimension of the scientific or technological inquiry that people are engaged in.
Mm-hmm. Because one of your Watsons is sort of a robot that the character is trying to perfect.
Right, exactly. So in my story, the character of Eliza is a computer scientist, and she has kind of like lifted some of IBM's technology from a job that she used to have there and taken it off and embedded it in a sociable robot, which is not necessarily what IBM is planning to do. But it's interesting to me to imagine the mind of the Watson computer inside a device that can interact socially and emotionally with people.
1-800-989-8255, talking about the Watsons with Madeline George. You running through the play is sort of a suspicion of technology. You're sort of suspicious about.
You mean I personally?
Well, the characters. I'm saying you as the playwright.
Yeah.
Is suspicious of how much we should depend on technology.
Maybe I would say skeptical? Or questioning, okay, rather than suspicious. I mean, I'm curious, right? And I'm drawn to the ways in which we are looking to technology to try to supplement our relationships. But I guess I'm a little concerned that the fact of the matter is that relationships are complicated and difficult and challenging. And we're so used to, at this moment, trying to solve our complicated and difficult and challenging problems with technology that we might try to use technology to solve our relationship problems. And that might be very damaging to what makes us most human.
Also, I also thought, because I picked up in one part of the play, now maybe, you know, I have you right here, I can just ask you about
it.
One of your characters made his fame and fortune as the inventor of a specialized piston, right? To be used in machines.
Yeah, I mean, this is wholly fictional.
But I'm using it as, the point I'm trying to make is that he also takes this piston and puts it in a pistol.
Yeah.
A gun.
Yeah.
To me, that says, you can do good with it, or you can do bad with the technology.
With technology, yeah, yes. Sure. Well, and also the other thing that I'm interested in the gun that this character of Merrick has built in this fictional scenario is that he, when he looks at the gun, he sees it as a device that brings people close together and it keeps people apart. So he imagines that this gun, by shooting a bullet further than any gun previously was able to, now that he's enhanced it with his new piston technology, that it brings adversaries together. But of course, it's not as intimate as beating somebody over the head with your own fists. And that, to me, is sort of an interesting metaphor for all tools. You know, that's what tools do. They create a bridge between a person and the thing that they're trying to touch. And they also make a separation by their very nature. And so, to me, the telephone does the same thing in a very interesting way. And certainly we feel that, I think, around us all the time now, how far apart we are and yet close together with our phones.
Yeah, and how dependent we have become.
And then, by extension, once those things become almost integrated into our bodies, now we have this very complicated zone between each other, between ourselves and each other, that's mediated by these tools.
In fact, one of your characters, a guy named Merrick, complains that he's totally dependent on his computer.
Right. I mean, the play sort of...
He has no idea how it works, right?
Right. He realizes, this is in an early scene when he's bringing a fictional Watson, who is an IT guy, in to help him with his computer. He realizes that once his computer goes down, he's done. He's toast. He doesn't have access to his bank account. He can't get to his email. And, I mean, I assume this is a common experience for a lot of us. We really realize that the tininess of the mechanisms inside these devices and their complexity makes them unfathomable to us. They're like as complicated and confusing as faraway galaxies to most people.
And yet we depend so much on something we cannot understand.
Exactly, and yet they're right in our pocket, and we interact with them constantly.
Mm-hmm. What's your message about that?
I would say that it's not a message so much as a kind of an attempt to refresh our vision about it. I mean, I feel like this is something that's, if we just unquestioningly allow ourselves to merge with these technologies and we don't think about what impact it might have on our daily lives and what it might do to our relationships, that's not good.
Now, I'm sure you hang out with other playwrights.
I do, in fact.
Do they talk about this as a fertile ground, our new society and high technology and social communities, and how are we, you know, writing about how we're dealing with this, or the raising questions about it?
Yeah, I think writers of all kinds are interested in this. I mean, this is a ubiquitous phenomenon in all of our lives now. Some playwrights are really interested in merging technology into their theater.
Such as?
I'm trying to think
of good
examples.
In what ways? Using 3D or something?
Yeah, using video technology, right, for example, or also like more and more. I mean, I recently saw a very interesting production that actually came from outside of the United States at BAM, and it was...
That's Brooklyn
Academy. At Brooklyn Academy of Music. Yeah. It was a... the audience was encouraged to tweet during the
performance.
Is that right? And the performance itself was sort of... immersive, and there were screens all over the place, and we were watching different parts of it happen in different places. That's fascinating to me and amazing, although I have to admit it's not really my métier. I'm much happier to take the brilliant John Ellison Conley, who's an actor, and have him and his human body portray a machine.
He was terrific.
He's great, isn't he?
He was terrific. You know, it's one of these actors you just say, and I've seen him someplace before.
I know.
In other places.
Yeah, well, you have. Yeah.
Now, you did visit IBM. Right.
I did.
Did you see the real Watson, the computer Watson?
We were not only lucky enough to meet a number of the computer scientists who were the designers and builders of Watson, but also, I don't know if they would allow us to use the word meet for our encounter with the machine, a little anthropomorphic, but we did.
The mind meld.
we beheld the machine. We stood quite near it. In fact, we walked into it. It was unbelievable. It was extraordinary.
Yeah. Did it influence you how you would write?
You know, besides just being dazzled by the scope and the beauty and the breathtaking complexity of the machine, I was really interested to talk to a number of the computer scientists who had worked on the machine for so long and ask them questions about their philosophical relationship to the work and also how they felt about Watson. And they were quite candid about saying things like, I love Watson, or Watson is like another child to me, or something. I felt very, I felt hardened by it because I know how easy it is for people who are not specialists to fall in a kind of love with our machines, and I was glad to see that they also were susceptible to those human feelings.
Does Watson have a face or shake a hand, or what is Watson? What
do you
does
mean up
it
at the
look like?
Headquarters? Well, they have very, I think very intelligently, they have a sort of beautiful, shiny, swirling avatar in front of the room full of processing cores where the brain, quote unquote, is. And you know, it's that beautiful, it's an image of the world with these thought arrows shooting around
it.
It's just enough of a kind of creature that you feel like you can sort of behold it and relate to it, but it's not too much like a person.
I'm talking with Madeline George, who is a playwright and author of The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence. Playing now?
Playing now at Playwrights Horizons.
For how long?
Until December 29th.
Think you get an extension?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know.
Take it around the country. You know, we have a lot of authors and playwrights come through and they have plays and they just don't leave. We want to get them life to go other places.
I love that idea. Well, there's only three actors, even though there's nine characters in my play, so hopefully it makes it quite portable.
All right. This is Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow talking with playwright Madeline George, author of The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence. Let's go to the phones because some folks have some interesting questions. Let's go to Matt in Rome, New York. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Madeline, I heard the name of the character of the play that's working on Watson, Eliza. I was wondering if that was some sort of reference to the early Eliza chatbot, which was supposed to be like an AI to trick people that had worked on.
Absolutely. That's very astute. Yeah, I was you're referring to the the early therapist bot designed by Joseph Weizenbaum, I think, at MIT. That program was a very simple natural language processing program that used just a teletype and not a voice. And it was designed to simulate a therapist and ask questions in response to your own questions. I actually I played with a version of that program as a child. And
yes, so did I.
Did you?
Yep.
Did she make you feel better?
Oh, Eliza is in early elementary school when we first had our first computer.
In your school?
Yeah.
How extraordinary.
We were at the school in the early 90s.
Wow. I was interested in Eliza for a couple of reasons. One, because that name also has a sort of theatrical resonance, since Weizenbaum chose the name Eliza based on Eliza Doolittle from the Shaw play Pygmalion.
Yeah.
But also because he himself became a critic of AI later on and really was also concerned about what people's sort of seductive relationship to that chatbot, what it augured for the future of our relationship with machines.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Ben in Tempe, Arizona. Hi, Ben. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
So I've noticed personally by reading the Iron Man comic and seeing the movies and the whatnot, that I think there's a lot of similarity between Tony Stark, who's Iron Man, and Sherlock Holmes. And Tony has developed an AI, Jarvis, which behaves much like his Watson. And I was wondering if you were familiar with that, what sort of interesting parallels you see with that, because Tony Stark is responsible for creating Jarvis and basically acting the same way as a counterpoint to a lot of these Watsons.
Wow, that's so cool. I have to confess total ignorance around Iron Man, which I feel very terrible about at this moment.
No.
I know. I'm sorry.
But the wheels are turning in her head.
It's
I can
true.
See him sitting right.
Just get lost in Wikipedia for the next couple hours after
how, this. Yeah, and Netflix. That's fantastic.
Yes, definitely.
I feel like that's so interesting to think about designing an AI Watson instead of the other way around as I have it in this play. That's really cool.
And what do you think, Ben, about that relationship?
Well, I find it very telling because I sometimes thought that maybe you could almost read Watson as just another part of Sherlock Holmes' personality that he kind of suppresses a lot. And that's very true because Tony Stark is a flawed character and whatnot, very reckless. Yeah. But he has to have some caution. And here he actually created the sentience that is his caution rather than playing it out in his head.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Okay, thanks for calling, Ben. Yeah, Watson, as we say, was this always the second person.
Right. I mean, I think of Watson as our entry point into those Sherlock Holmes stories. You know, he's like us in those stories.
Well, he's supposedly telling the story.
Right. Absolutely. And he also has the combination of credulousness and warmth that we would, I assume, think that is more like our role in those stories.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll have a follow up to this or?
You mean in terms of this, the same content?
Yeah, same kind of idea?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've been very interested in plays that use a single actor to play multiple different roles, sometimes roles including animals and roles including superhuman figures, and I wonder if this doesn't sort of exhaust it for me to finally go through every part of this one kind of Watson figure, as fractured as he is.
Well, it's interesting how all four of them came together.
Yeah.
You know, they just united them very well.
Well, thanks. I'm glad.
And it was quite an interesting play, and I wish you good luck with the play.
Thank you very much.
We hope it gets more life after this short run here.
Thanks a lot.
We're talking with Madeline George, who is the playwright of The Curious Case of the Watson Intelligence. It just had its world premiere off-Broadway, and if you can catch it before it closes, I suggest you do so. Maybe if you're here in New York for the holidays, it's at
Playwrights Horizons on 42nd Street.
There you go. Thanks again for coming.
Thanks for having
That's
me.
About all the time we have for today. Charles Berquist is our director. Our senior producer is Christopher Intagliata. Alexa Lim is our associate producer. Our SciArts producer is Annie Minoff. Lou Graskin is our video producer. Sam Flato, our production assistant. Neil Rauch, our technical director, spinning the dials here in New York. And if you missed any part of our program, you'd like to hear it again, subscribe to our podcast, audio, video we have up there. We're on iTunes and Android apps, or you can point your tablet or your smartphone to our website at sciencefriday.com. And we have all kinds of resources there. If you like us on Facebook. Give us a little check there. And join us all week long. We talk on Twitter at SciFry. Happy holiday in New York. I'm Ira Flato.